Councilmember Janice Lewis-George running for mayor of D.C. Thank you for taking the time to come in and chat with us this afternoon. Let's just get right into things. Why are you running for mayor?
Yeah, you know, for me, I am running for mayor to put people first. And that means addressing the real affordability crisis we have in this city, whether it's housing or childcare. You know, I'm a council member, and even myself, I feel the squeeze of having to afford to stay here and growing up here in D.C. You know, my mom is a postal worker, and even with a good union job, you know, the rent went too high on the home that we grew up in, and she had to leave that home, right? And so this affordability crisis is impacting all of us, and we need leadership who's going to address the affordability crisis. We also need leadership in this moment while we are facing the federal intrusion that we are, to have moral clarity and the courage to stand up to this administration and to defend all of D.C. residents. And so this moment has called me to step up to face to address the affordability crisis and to stand up for all of D.C.'s neighbors.
You know, when it comes to affordability, what are some of the ideas you have that you plan to bring to the table here?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to address our child care crisis for sure. D.C. has the highest child care in the country, and families every day are struggling to figure out how they're going to pay for child care. And so here in D.C., we're going to implement universal child care. We're going to expand the eligibility of our child care subsidy until everyone can afford it, until it's universal for all D.C. families. I'm going to bring about a change for housing and adding a new tool to our housing through government-owned housing that creates the deeply affordable housing that we need in this city, to expand the amount of affordable housing we have in this city and address that real deep affordability crisis that, despite us spending about $1.4 billion over the last 10 years on housing, we're now still in a real deep hole on deeply affordable housing. And that's because the market alone and focusing on profit isn't the way that we're going to be able to create that deeply affordable housing. And it's time for government to step up and use all the tools we have to do that.
You know, talk a bit about how you juggle. Obviously, you have landlords who say it's difficult sometimes being a landlord. Then you have, of course, the people trying to afford the rent, and the rents are very high. So how do you juggle both of those things to have enough housing available? And you also have, you know, the people able to pay the rents.
That's right. And that's what I've done as council member. I work with landlords in Ward 4 and tenants in Ward 4. And here's the reality. Our tenants are saying, listen, we're trying to pay our rent. We're not getting paid enough to keep up with the current market that we're in. You know, we're paying for groceries, we're paying for childcare, we're paying for all these things, and rent right now is really high. That's why when the council 2 years ago was facing the ability to make the rent 12% higher, I fought back, and we were able to make it so it was only 4% for seniors and 6% for everyday folk, recognizing that, you know, people need to be able to afford rent. It's also why I stood and said, you know, we had emergency rental assistance programs that need to be funded and have to be funded. And those funds go straight to the landlords who are desperately in need of having their rents paid. They have, you know, when I talk to landlords, they have thousands of dollars in arrears. And those things really stifle their ability to provide the dignified housing we need. So you got to do both. And as Ward 4 council member, I've been able to find that balance. And as a mayor, I'm going to do the same thing.
You know, with public safety, let's kind of focus there. That's obviously right. A lot of elements to it, but just what are some of your ideas when it comes to addressing crime, and obviously a big concern for many in the city?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've, as council member, as a person who lives here, I understand sort of just how, you know, gun violence tears communities apart. It makes people want to not just hear crime is going down, they want to feel safe, right? It's not just about saying we're safe, it's about being actually safe. And, you know, as a former prosecutor, I have had to deal with the toughest crimes and see the impacts of those things. And so for me, we got to do three things, right? We got to do the prevention work, we got to do the intervention work, but more importantly, we got to do that enforcement accountability work. And so what I'm going to do in the enforcement area is do a few things. One, make sure that our police officers are doing the jobs that they are trained to do, and take away some of the things that they keeps them from being able to close cases and being able to get guns off the street. And that's responding to calls for mental health and health disturbances. Let's get our crisis responders actually responding to those things. Traffic enforcement is another thing, right? Getting our DPW and DDOT to step up in traffic enforcement so our officers can focus on reducing crime in the city, closing cases, because closing cases is the biggest deterrent in allowing us to reduce crime. We're also going to make sure our communities have resources, right? Community hubs is something that is important in every neighborhood. The communities are the safest, are the ones that come together and the ones that are most resourced. And so our community hubs are going to be a one-stop shop in every ward. That's going to be a space for people to come together and get the government resources that they need.
You know, let's talk with the police department. You would have a say-so on who leads the police department. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to building that community trust, there's so many elements to that position, right? So what are some of the things you would look for in leadership of the police department?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so critical, especially right now in this moment. Trust is broken. And that's why on day one as mayor, I would be rescinding the mayor's order that allows the collaboration of MPD to collaborate with ICE and immigration enforcement. Officers many of them don't actually want to do it when I talk to them on the ground, but also it has created such distrust in our communities. So rescinding that is going to be important. The other thing that we're going to do is stop MPD from using their resources for federal immigration law enforcement. Their vehicles and their time and energy should be faced with reducing crime here in the city and serving the residents that they want to serve. A new police chief has to understand that they're going to have to be rebuilding trust. And also they're going to have to understand that closing cases and improving our case closure rate is important for us deterring crime and just being a transparent voice in this city so that people, you know, continue to have the great respect they do for those who put their lives on the line.
Have you had a chance to get to know the interim police chief? Is he someone who would be on your radar as you move forward? Or have you thought that far ahead when it comes to who would you put in that position, or would you keep it?
I honestly haven't had a chance to think that far ahead. I do have something scheduled on the books to meet with the interim chief coming up soon. But, you know, with any administration during our transition committee time, we will be, you know, really weighing the options of, you know, who's going to be the best person to come into this really difficult moment we are in D.C. And lead our police department in a way that builds community trust and also allows them to close the cases that are necessary.
Now, let's talk about what we saw last year when it came to the federal law enforcement surge. We saw challenges to home rule in several different ways. Mm-hmm. How do you juggle that as being the mayor in a federal city, which, you know, there is some control on the federal government side here? How do you juggle both? Many are concerned it could go too far if city pushes back too much.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I tell people all the time, like, I'm a daughter of the district. I grew up here. And so I understand just how deeply important it is for us to maintain home rule. And I would never do anything to jeopardize our home rule. You know, my ancestors fought for it and we're going to preserve it. And I've also been a prosecutor who, you know, did cases here in D.C. So I really understand the complexities of working with our federal entities and the necessity that brings about. But for me, I think the strategy is going to be for me a few things. First, working with our Attorney General, Brian Schwab, and making sure that we're using every tool we have to fight back against federal intrusion on our autonomy. The second thing is really having an inside and outside strategy. And that means going down to Congress, myself, right, as the mayor. Now, as council member, I've gone to Congress, talked to members of the House and in the Senate, and you'd be surprised. Many of them have said, this is the first time I'm ever hearing from D.C. And to me, we cannot do that. We have to be building those relationships in the House and the Senate, because that's the only way we're going to maintain our autonomy here in D.C. And the other thing is our regional partners. We have to work with our regional partners. I'm so excited to be able to work with Governor Westmore in Maryland, our new governor in Virginia, Spanberger, to come up with a regional strategy to defend. There are relationships to leverage. There are relationships to build. And I believe that in doing so, we can put ourselves in a great space to fight against federal intrusion and ultimately fight for statehood.
And you talked a bit about this, but I want to give you a chance to talk about other elements of it. Mayor Bowser, what would you continue? What would you change when it comes to how she has run the city?
Yeah. You know, I think we have so many great programs here in the city. I would continue, obviously, to Parks and Park and Recreation, continue to be a space and place for our young people, for our seniors, for everyday residents, wanting to continue to have a government that is a space and place for people to grow, to learn, and to thrive. That's something I'm definitely going to continue. Really continue the work that we've been doing to, you know, focus on building our economy by focusing on supporting our small businesses, focusing on supporting our neighborhoods, and continuing to grow our economy in a way that we can do all the things we want to do, which is create an equitable city for everyone. I think where, you know, I'm going to differ is obviously, you know, I would like a more robust approach to how we're dealing with Trump right now in this moment and building those relationships and leveraging the relationships and being more on the ground in the House and Senate to do that. But also just being a more transparent and accountable government, right? Listening to our residents and delivering for them. We have a real crisis with our 911 center. We got to make sure that we have a 911 that works. We have to make sure we have a crime lab that's accredited. We have to make sure that we are reducing the amount of crashes we have in our city, and our young people and our seniors are safe when they walk to and from, whether it's to and from school or to and from, you know, a doctor's appointments. And so there's a lot of ways in which we have to improve the way our government responds. 311 needs to work, and people need to feel like they have a government that when their leaves get picked up, that when they say leaves are going to get picked up, the leaves actually get picked up, right? And so there is a way in which our government can work better for people, and a way we can defend DC in this moment. And those are the ways I'm looking forward to being mayor and doing those things.
You know, I do want to ask you about the 911 situation, yeah, because that's been something that seems to constantly crop up through the years here. So talk a bit about, you know, what are some of your ideas for when it comes to the Office of Unified Communications?
That's right. You know, OUC, and I've gone and done several tours there. We have a few issues that are really chronic there, right? We have to address the vacancy and retention issues there, right? We're going to have to increase the amount of call takers we have. In addition to increasing the amount of call takers we have, we're going to have to increase the amount of training. It can't be a one-time, you know, once-a-year training. It has to be consistent training throughout the call work with our call takers. The other thing that we have to do is really just take a step back and look at the system and say, you know, are we using the best technology in this moment? We have other cities that we're going to look at who have similarly sized cities who figured out how 911 works. So we have the ability to do that here. And so in focusing on retention, training, and technology and systems that can work and best fit here in D.C., I think we can improve it. And the biggest thing is just the transparency and accountability that has not come and needs to come from recognizing we have a problem here and we have to fix it.
All right. Your council colleague, Kenny McDuffie, announcing his candidacy as well. So can you talk a bit about how you differ from him and your thoughts on him entering the race here?
Yeah, you know, I think it's healthy for democracy for people to have options, and a big proponent of having options and people doing that. This year will be the city's first opportunity for ranked choice voting. I'm a fair elections candidate, so we've taken a number of steps to create more options for people. So I'm excited for people to have these options in this race. I think for me, I have been very consistent in putting people first, whether it was making sure we had librarians in all of our schools, whether it was fighting against rent hikes, whether it was putting the funds in my first year in our Homes and Hearts Amendment to increase and earn income tax credit, make sure that we had pay equity fund for our childhood educators so they could get paid the money, right? Everything I have done has been a consistent show of putting people first and listening to residents deliver, right? Some of my, you know, constituent services legislations like Safe Routes, making sure all of our kids had safe infrastructure around their schools, clean collections, making sure trash wasn't just building up across our city. Like, these are the things that constituents, when you're listening to constituents, you have the ability to deliver for them. And I've been consistent in doing so. And I've also had a very clear record of moral courage and clarity, right? I've been fighting for our tenants. I have been fighting for our residents, our immigrant community, right? Ward 4 has the largest immigrant community. And in this moment, I have been on the ground making sure our community members were safe and putting resources around those who have been taken to try to get them back to their families. So that consistency and being able to create legislation and policies and funding to put people first, and that ability to have moral courage and stand up in this moment, I think the two things that really set me apart in this moment and why I'm the mayor that this moment needs.
Are there any specific examples with former Councilmember McDuffie where you think consistency has been a concern?
You know, I just think the follow through, you know, I would look, you know, the NEAR Act was passed a decade ago. And there have been issues with the implementation of the NEAR Act and the funding of the NEAR Act and it being done in fidelity. I think we could be in the same place Baltimore is now if we really followed through on making sure the NEAR Act was done to its full capabilities. I think, we've seen baby bonds was introduced, but it's still never funded. And I think, it's one thing to put legislation forward. It's another thing to have it implemented and funded. And that follow through is necessary if you're going to be effective in this moment. And I think I've never shied away from being not standing up and having courage in moments to defend D.C. residents. And I think that has been clear. And that's how I would lead and govern as mayor.
All right, some easy questions for you. What is something D.C. residents might not know about you personally that you'd like to share with them you think they should know about you?
You know what? I think people should know. I'm also just a real big goofball. I love comedy. I love going to comedy shows. In Ward 4, we have this amazing comedy venue on Upshur, the 808 Room. I love just going and listening to comedians trying out their new jokes. I have comedians I love from, old school, Regina Hall, and Kevin Hart to Sebastian Maniscalco, who's a comedian who just great jokes about just being a son of immigrants. So I just love all types of comedy. And I think D.C. is a comedy town, too. And people don't, people don't do that. But I just love laughing and having and bringing laughter into every space, because I think it's what the medicine we need in these moments to keep going. Yeah.
What's your favorite D.C. restaurant?
Favorite D.C. restaurant. Okay, so the restaurant I eat at all the time is Andrine's, which is a Caribbean and soul food restaurant on 3rd and Kennedy Street. Shout out to Andrine's. I probably eat there maybe about 3 times a month, if not more. Andrine probably would say more because I'm showing up there all the time. So that's by far my favorite restaurant as far as just going to most consistently. And Andrine she knows how to make a mean mac and cheese. The jerk chicken wings are just top tier. I haven't found a better jerk chicken wing in my life, and they have jerk chicken sandwiches. So anyways, head to 3rd and Kennedy and go to Andrine's. That the soul food and the Caribbean food there is just top tier.
Favorite TV show? What's on your streaming playlist?
Streaming right now. Oh my goodness! This is so funny. I love British crime. I know that's. And my husband makes fun of me. Anytime a British crime goes up, he's like, "I'm sure you're about to watch this British crime show." My Netflix is a lot of random British crime shows. I love a little sci-fi. So Stranger Things. I have not had time because I'm running for office. So do the finale. So I finally watched the finale of Stranger Things. So I'm pretty proud to finally bring that to a conclusion.
Finally, favorite artists on your playlist. If you have Spotify or Amazon Music, whatever it may be, but what are we going to find in your playlist when it comes to music?
I am obsessed with Olivia Dean right now. I mean, she's just a breath of fresh air. When you listen to her music, you feel dancing, you feel smiling. It's like a feeling of hanging out with your girlfriends. Her song Man I Need is just stuck in my head. But all of her music, I mean, I think she's just such a great upcoming star right now. And her music is just, brings happiness and joy in a moment where we really need it.